Back in December, I sat in Pastor Dan's office one morning, as I'm prone to do. We were discussing our plans for the week, people to visit, preparations for Christmas, the price of Bitcoin, you know, pastor stuff. And then Dan said we should really look at our plans for Lent. I didn't know what I was doing for lunch that day, but Dan's always better at thinking ahead than I am. I don't remember who came up with the idea of the Ten Commandments, but at first, neither of us were very thrilled. See, the Ten Commandments, they are not the foundation of our lives. Truth be told, they aren't even the foundation of our laws. Depending on how you count them, only 2.5 to 3.5 commandments are even laws. You can covet and commit adultery all you want. No one's going to arrest you. And even beyond the law and back to the church, the Ten Commandments, they don't teach us the faith or give us faith. They don't teach us to pray or to care for one another. They don't give us grace. They are, quite simply, a list of rules. And as a community centered on grace, Dan and I were a little anxious about spending weeks on a list of rules. Apparently, that reluctance we felt isn't new, though, because as far as we could tell, we haven't done an in-depth look at the commandments here in decades. Despite the fact that they are really a key part of the Christian faith and Lutheran tradition, so maybe we figured it's time to just jump right in. And here's my hope as we look at the commandments this Lent. From my experience with them, as you dive into the commandments, you really get a glimpse of life. These rules have a way of pointing out the failures and the cracks of our world. And if you come to them from a place of grace and faith, well, then you might discover a path through the cracked world, a path that leads to life for you and neighbor alike. But not if you just talk about them in the abstract, like I've been doing. You've got to jump right in. So let's do that. Number one, you shall have no other gods. Standing on the mountain with the people below him, Moses entered into the cloud to receive the commandments from God, and it started out with, you shall have no other gods. The Israelites below were barely a people. After generations of enslavement, they'd pretty much forgotten the faith and customs they had before. Slavery defined their lives, and now that they were free, they really didn't know who they were. What values, what practices, what beliefs made them a common people? They were just searching. And if you're searching like that, you're bound to find a God. Not necessarily the God with a capital G, but a God. A God, Luther says, is anything on which your heart relies and depends. A God is something you trust in. A God is something you look for goodness and meaning and truth. A God is something you depend on. And the Israelites, to be frank, they needed a God. And like it or not, they were going to find one out there. Wandering in the desert with no resources, no real history, they were ripe for a God to just pick them up and make them its followers. Shoot, even a golden calf proved good enough to be a God for them. And we're no different, really. We all have gods. We all have those things we rely on, those things we trust in, those things we allow ourselves to be defined by. So as an author once noted, the question is not whether you believe in God. The question is, what God do you believe in? And the first commandment is clear on this one. Make God your God. Not the golden calf, not the gods of the Egyptians you had before, nor the gods of the land you are headed to now. Rather, make God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who created the world and sustains it. Make God your God. Not the gods of wealth, or security, or political party. Not the gods of youth, or success, or power. Not the gods of stuff, or sex, or nation. Make God your God. And not the God of self. I actually think this is the most common God we turn to. We turn to ourselves. We rely on our own goodness, our own smarts, our own strength. We're told by well-meaning guidance counselors and professional athletes that we can do anything we put our minds to. But of course, if we're honest, we know our limitations, our failings. We look in the mirror hoping to see a God, and later we're a little disappointed. We'd do better to make God our God. There's a thing about the commandments you may have noticed. Most of them are rules about what you should not do. You shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And when you spend some time with these shall nots, You begin to see the many ways our world is full of failings and sin and temptations and cracks of all sorts. You see all the ways this world can just fall apart on you. It's true in this first commandment. You shall have no other gods. When we make money or power or our own selves a god, we end up serving money or power or our own selves. We sacrifice the good of the whole for these things. Life in this world is worse with these gods. And that's when you realize, man, this is a good commandment. You shall have no other gods. That's a good shall not. But it's also more than that. Martin Luther loved the Ten Commandments. He spent a lot of time studying them and teaching them, and he realized that accompanying these shall nots were shalls, implied positive rules that go alongside the negative commands. And while the shall nots highlight the cracks of this world, the shalls, the should do's, they show us how to faithfully live in this cracked world. You shall have no other gods. You shall make God your God. Make God and God alone your God. A pretty straightforward shall, isn't it? But also hard. Because who is God with a capital G? It might have struck the Israelites a little odd to be told they have no other gods, to be sure to make the one and only God their God, and then to have the one and only God behind a cloud on a mountain. They didn't see or hear God, just got a second-hand account from Moses. They were to make God their God, but then God had to go and be all mysterious to them, hidden in a cloud. At least you could see the golden calf. And you might be thinking, well, at least they had a cloud. We have old stories and religious practices, but no cloud at all, let alone a clear God. Make God your God, okay, who's that? Here our faith asks us to look, of course, to Jesus. For the clearest picture of who God is, the clearest picture of who to put our trust in, who to look to for grace and goodness, who to respect and love, to see God, we look to Jesus. Jesus, the one who welcomes sinners, that's God. Jesus, the one who stood up to power and brought power to the powerless, that's God. Jesus, the one who healed and taught, that's God. Jesus, the good shepherd who leads us beside still waters, the good shepherd who calls out our names so that we might not be tempted by all the other shepherds and thieves, all those other gods, the good shepherd who loves the sheep, that's God. The good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep, that's God. Make God your God. Make God, the one seen in Jesus, the good shepherd, make that God your God. So today is Ash Wednesday, perhaps the strangest of all Christian holidays, especially when it falls on February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, by the way. But I think this day, when we mark a cross of ashes on our foreheads, I actually think today is a perfect day to remember the first commandment. In a little bit, you'll be invited to come forward to receive the ashen cross, and you'll be told to remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Today, we remember that we are mortal, that we are of this earth, that we are emphatically not God. If the greatest temptation, the greatest way we break the shall not, is by making ourselves a God, then remembering our mortality is as good a way as any to keep the commandment. On Ash Wednesday, we heed the first shall not. But we also heed the first shall. We not only recognize how ill-fitted we are at being gods, we also make God our God, the God known through Christ. Because the mark on your head is not just the mark of ashes, it's a cross that marks who our God is. And upon our foreheads, it is a cross that marks us as those who trust in this God who loves us like a good shepherd does, this God who loves us enough to lay down his life for his sheep on a cross. The question isn't whether you believe in God or not. We all have a God. The question is, which God do you believe in? Today, with this mark on our foreheads, we say that this God is our God. Amen.